This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. A little later in the show, we're going to be taking a look at this week's confirmation hearings. But first, on Wednesday of this week, Open Doors USA released its 2017 World Watch List, which focuses on the countries that most often persecute Christians. And for the third straight year, the persecution of Christians worldwide has hit another record high. The president and CEO of Open Doors USA is Dr. David Curry, and he joined FRC President Tony Perkins on Wednesday to talk about it.
David, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you again.
It's always a pleasure to be with you. Pleasure to be here in D.C.
We spoke a few weeks ago, and you told me the new list was going to be coming out, and there was, you know, more troubling signs. And so the latest report tells us what?
Well, what it tells us is that persecution is continuing to grow. 2016, during the reporting period, was the most dramatic rise in persecution that we have seen yet. And I have said this now for 3 to 4 years in a row. I think that's
sitting in that same chair.
Exactly. I think that's an indictment on how this past administration has dealt with it. But it also signals an opportunity for the incoming administration to put this front and center in their foreign policy, because it's fundamental, Tony, what's happening to the Christians around the world in countries all over the map, and we're going to talk about a few of them, is fundamental. It's human right to have the freedom of conscience, decide what you want to believe.
Well, even the UN has recognized that as a fundamental human right, and that is the freedom of religion, the ability to have a religion, not have a religion, change your religion. And it is a statutorily stated priority of this country by Congress, signed into law by the president, but yet it's not been so much so at under the current administration at the State Department. Before we go into the list of, I'm going to go into maybe the top 10. You've got a top 50 ranking, 50 countries. And folks, you can find out more. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. This is not subjective. I mean, this is objective criteria you look at that you measure these year by year. So I just want to put that out front here. This is not just people saying, well, I read this in the paper, and that means you have people on the ground, you're evaluating this. Tell our listeners how you rank these countries.
Well, methodology is really important, because sometimes you'll have the folks who have an anecdotal list. They'll say, these people really annoy us. What we've done is gone grassroots level, talk to pastors, talk to people who have been involved in these incidents. We're not just talking to that upper crust within the society, the elites, the bishops, the cardinals. We're getting right down to it. And so then we score across a number of facets, the violence incidents, how many are violent, what is the pressure, what's the squeeze within the family, the community, the national government, and then we give them each a numerical score, and it adds up to the World Watch List. So when you get a country at the top of the World Watch List, it means across all spheres of life, personal, family, community, and even violence, it ranks exceptionally high.
All right, let's go down that top 10 list of the worst abusers in the 2017 World Watch List.
Well, North Korea is number one 16 years in a row, just barely. Somalia is number two, right behind it. Two totally different environments. North Korea, a family business, so to speak, a cult created around the grandfather, now carried on to the grandson.
Where you have to worship the Kim family.
Yeah, that's right. Kim Il-sung-ism is the religion of North Korea, and anything that challenges their sense of deity in themselves is considered hostile to the regime. So that puts Christians front and center. And Christians,
I mean, I was reading through that, and that's almost like the early church, where if you didn't bow down to Caesar or offer incense to Caesar, you would be killed. And that's actually what's happening in North Korea.
You can't go anywhere in North Korea without seeing big posters, statues, where people have to give obeisance to these folks. And Christianity is not about that at all. So they are a hostile class within the country. If you're caught owning a Bible, talking about Jesus, suspected of it, you can be arrested. They do have these communistic old school systems, neighborhood watch. If you're visiting, having a small group, you'll be reported. And that way it's very Kafkaesque, you know, in its wow. in its regime. Different than what you see in the right. Islamic extremists.
Like countries. Somalia, number
like
two
Somalia,
on the list.
In North Korea, you have the benefit, so to speak, of being arrested. In Somalia, if you're suspected of being a Christian or known to be a Christian, you can be just beheaded on the spot by extremist rebels. So very violent, no due process at all.
So yeah, the contrast there, North Korea, it's more the government. In Somalia, oftentimes, of course, Somalia doesn't really have much of a government.
No.
And it's a clan and tribal led, but you have these Islamic officials stir up crowds. And
yeah.
it's the crowds that actually execute.
Yeah, the extremists, the Al-Shabaab extremists and other extremist tribes. Mob violence is part of that. The family level of violence. If your family knows that you've committed to Christ, you can be killed by your family. So it's brutal in Somalia. It was nearly number one this year, but not quite.
Just behind Somalia is Afghanistan.
Yeah, Afghanistan is a very difficult area. No strong established church there. Taliban is increasing in strength again. You have tribal areas, very difficult, very violent in Afghanistan.
Pakistan?
Pakistan is one of those countries. There's a historic church in Pakistan that is under increasing pressure. Muslim background believers, people who come from the Muslim faith under, you know, it's very dangerous to convert. They don't recognize it. But if the culture sees somebody who's converted, you'll be hurt. Evangelistic efforts, evangelism, evangelical churches, great pressure. Violence against them. Pakistan has strong blasphemy laws that are really under a lot of pressure. So even moderate Muslims who speak out on it, as you well know and many of your listeners will know, risk death, assassination,
right.
these sorts of things. It's a country on the bubble. Right now, it's quite high on the world watch list. It could get worse. We're praying it gets better.
Wow. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest, Dr. David Curry, he is the president of Open Doors. We're discussing their World Watch List 2017. And by the way, coming up this Sunday, it's National Religious Liberty Day, where we focus on religious liberty. Of course, you cannot look here within our own country at the importance of religious liberty without looking abroad as well, because religious freedom is not an American right, it is a human right. Even the United Nations, as we said a moment ago, recognizes that fact. So next on the list after Pakistan, number five is
Sudan. And you have a country that has had a dictator, more or less authoritarian regime, al-Bashir, who has bombed Christians in the Nuba Mountains. He's trying to isolate them, drive them out, wants to impose a strict Sharia law. It's a failed state, and he's a war criminal, and Christians have been under great pressure. Very dangerous to be a Christian there.
Of course, we see next on the list, this is a country, actually the next three countries have been very prominent in the news in the last few years, Syria.
Yes, Syria number six, place. Iraq number seven. Obviously, the Islamic State and the story there is well known by people. One of the blessings is the revival that is happening underground in the Syrian church, but it is under great pressure. A lot of Christians have left Syria. I was talking with a Syrian pastor just today. He sees more violence. There's going to need to be a transition within the heart of these people in Syria to understand the value of religious pluralism, that Christian faith should have a role there. The historic church
has always had been there. I mean, yeah. We're talking about the area of the world that is the birthplace of Christianity.
Oh, Damascus, the Paul experience, right? And the historic church is still present in Syria, just under pressure. It exists, you know, intact in Damascus, but in Aleppo and other places, not so much.
You have to be, I mean, obviously it's got to be heart-wrenching, disturbing when you go and you see these things that are taking place to men, women, and children mm-hmm. in these parts of the country. But you also have to leave with a profound sense of encouragement to see these people, as you just mentioned, I think the pastor you mentioned was at your press conference today.
Yeah.
Their commitment to Christ.
Yes. I mean,
it's amazing.
The root of what we're all about is lifting up the name of Jesus. And when we see that happen, whether it's in North Korea or in North Dakota, good things happen, even in the face of persecution. So it's inspiring.
Rounding out that list, we have Iran, Yemen, and Eritrea make out the top 10 of the countries.
Yeah, Iran, obviously a lot of folks know about that regime. Seems to be opening up to the West over the last couple of years. Don't be drawn in on that. High levels of persecution. The only reason it's not higher this year is because of all the violence in the other sectors. Yemen has driven a lot of the Christians out due to their civil war. We call it a civil war. It's really Saudi Arabia and Iran as a proxy war there, but it's on the list and near the top because of the attacks on the Catholic ministries there and other places that people may have heard about. Eritrea is a regime that imposes Sharia law on their people. It's a despotic rule. A lot of Christians historically, an Orthodox church in Eritrea that's been under great pressure.
Hmm. So. Well, David, we're out of time, but before we go, how can people be helpful to open doors as they come alongside these other Christians?
Like you said, be knowledgeable. Be writing your representatives of the administration. Tell them this is important to you. Pray through this list.
Pray, get this information, pray, have your church pray, your Sunday school classes, your youth groups pray, and then support organizations like Open Doors. Our family does. They're a great ministry. We know what they do. We watch them. We work with them. And I cannot speak more highly of them. Dr. David Curry, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You can find a link to the 2017 World Watch List and Open Doors USA when you visit tonyperkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at some of the highlights from this week's confirmation hearings on Capitol Hill. You won't want to miss it.
Pro-Life Con is FRC's Digital Action Summit, celebrating digital pro-life activism. Watch free online on January 27th from FRC's headquarters in Washington. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, activists, and testimonies from families and individuals who choose life. You'll be empowered to better reach your own communities by learning from the cutting edge of the digital pro-life movement.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Earlier this week, President-elect Donald Trump's pick for Secretary of State went before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Former ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson faced some tough questioning during his Senate confirmation hearing, and on Wednesday, World Magazine reporter J.C. Derrick joined Tony to discuss the hearing he had just been witness to. Here's Tony Perkins.
Here's a portion of the exchange between Rex Tillerson and Florida Senator Marco Rubio.
Let me ask you this question. Is Vladimir Putin a war criminal?
I would not use that term.
Vladimir Putin and his cronies are responsible for ordering the murder of countless dissidents, journalists, and political opponents.
I do not have sufficient information to make that claim.
Are you aware that people who oppose Vladimir Putin wind up dead all over the world, poisoned, shot in the back of the head, and do you think that was coincidental, or do you think that it is quite possible, or likely, as I believe, that they were part of an effort to murder his political opponents?
Well, people who speak up for freedom in regimes that are repressive are often a threat, and these things happen to them. In terms of assigning specific responsibilities, I would have to have more information. You know, as I indicated, I feel it's important that in advising the president, if confirmed, that I deal with facts, that I deal with sufficient information, which means having access to all information, and I'm sure there's a large body of information that I've never seen that's in the classified realm. I look forward, if confirmed, to becoming fully informed, but I am not willing to make conclusions on what is only publicly available or have been publicly reported.
None of this is classified, Mr. Tillerson. These people are dead. Political opponents are
your
dead.
Your question was people who were directly responsible for that. I'm not disputing these people are dead.
With us now is J.C. Derrick. He is with World Magazine and was on Capitol Hill today in the various hearings that were taking place. J.C., welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. It's good to be here.
All right. That exchange between Marco Rubio and Tillerson, probably one of the more pointed moments in terms of his exchange with Republicans. What was your sense of today's hearing for Rex Tillerson?
Yeah, I think you were exactly right to zero in on that moment. And I would say it was not only the most pointed exchange with a Republican, but really on either side, which is it's notable that obviously it was a Republican, being Tillerson is a Republican nominee. And so Senator Rubio has had three turns today, and each time has gone after Tillerson very directly on some of these issues that, as he noted, are in the public domain. It does not require classified information. And over and over and over again, Mr. Tillerson has said he just doesn't have enough information to make these judgments, which Mr. Rubio, Senator Rubio finds particularly concerning when you're talking about something as basic as Saudi Arabia. You know, can you say that they're a human rights violator? And Mr. Tillerson said he didn't have enough information to make that judgment. So there's a lot of questions as to, if you don't have that information, if we can't agree on that baseline, there's a lot of questions about what other factors Mr. Tillerson may be taking into account when he's conducting foreign policy.
Your overall sense of Tillerson's confirmation, the hearing, other areas of weakness that you see that maybe senators zeroing in on?
Well, clearly Russia was the number one issue. I mean, on both sides of the aisle, it kept coming up over and over and over again. There was also a lot of talk about climate change, particularly from the Democratic side. There were some talks of potential conflicts of interest, but I would say more than anything, it was this issue of human rights. If there's a weakness, it was that, there's suspicion that Mr. Tillerson has a penchant for putting the interests of, in the past, his company ahead of human rights, basically the ends justifies the means kind of mentality. And, I think if you're looking for a weakness, I really didn't see any evidence today, any of his testimony that would really assuage those concerns.
Now, let's talk pure politics when it comes to the confirmation. Now, operating under what the Democrats established, it's just 51 votes, and they can approve these nominations. That is thanks to Harry Reid, who changed the rules on these nominations. But you have 52 Republicans, so he has to be able to get almost all of the Republicans. Now, we've had Lindsey Graham, John McCain, and, of course, Marco Rubio all raising questions. Is there some question about whether or not he's confirmed?
Oh, there definitely is, and I'll give it to you on two fronts. Number one, yesterday, Senator Sessions said that the nominee for Attorney General said that he would not vote on either his own nomination or any other nomination. So depending on how the timing went, you could be down a Republican vote there, but then just getting out of committee could be an issue because no one's really talking about this, but he's got to get out of committee before he gets to the Senate floor. And right now, Republicans only have a one-seat majority on the Foreign Relations Committee. So theoretically, if all Democrats and Marco Rubio voted against Tillerson, then they could block his nomination.
Don't go away. We'll be back with more from the confirmation hearings in just a few moments on the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
From the ruling to uphold Obamacare's individual mandate, to the ruling to redefine marriage, to the ruling that allows the government to seize a citizen's home, these are the many important decisions that the United States Supreme Court has made recently. The Supreme Court's decision affects all of us, and it decides about 70 cases every year. Join Family Research Council Action as we work to ensure the confirmation of Supreme Court justices who will uphold the Constitution. Become a member today at frcaction.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Continuing the discussion on President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet nominations, retired Marine General James Mattis has been tapped to be Trump's Secretary of Defense. And on Thursday, Tony talked with our own retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin about the nominee.
General Boykin, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Glad to be with you here.
All right, I want you to be as objective as possible. I know it was a Marine general we're talking about here, but your thoughts on how matters did today.
Well, other than the uniform that he wore during his career, I thought that he did very well.
See, the Marine, you just don't. You are jealous because the Marines have a much better looking uniform.
Well, what's really bad is when your wife says the same thing, and my wife has said that multiple times.
That's why the women like the Marines. I'm just going to tell
you. They do. I agree with you. Listen, Tony, I thought that it was he was very straightforward. Unlike most generals, it seemed that he took the stand that the less you say, the better. He did not wax eloquent on things, and I think that was very deliberate. The only thing that I think that I am concerned about is, well, two things that came out of today's hearing was that he's not in favor of rolling back this Iran deal. Now, his reasons for it, as he stated, was America gave their word and we ought to live up to it. That said, I'm concerned about that because I think that the Iranians have done nothing but violate this so-called deal ever since it started.
Well, I have to question whether or not America gave its word.
Yeah,
I guess you could argue that the leaders manipulating the process gave their word, but certainly I don't think Congress was not behind it.
Yeah. The other thing is that and I'd have to go back and look at exactly what he said, but he certainly didn't advocate for moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv, and that has been a platform pledge that Trump made, and I think that it's given what we've just done to Israel by abandoning really what is a 68-year program of support for Israel. I think that it would be in our best interest to show our allies that we will stand with our allies, that we do support Israel. The first step ought to be moving that embassy. And I don't think in today's hearing that Jim Mattis embraced that. He didn't say, from what I read, he didn't say no, but he didn't endorse it.
It's interesting when he identified the threats out there that at the top of the list was Russia. That's not different from, not unlike what the chairman of the Joint Chiefs during his confirmation hearing 18 months ago, General Munford, Marine General, also identified Russia as the greatest threat. Nothing has changed. It would suggest that maybe that threat has gotten even more intense.
Well, I think it has, and I think it has gotten more intense because if you look back 2 weeks ago, where Russia, Turkey, and Iran all met in Moscow to decide what the way ahead was in the Middle East, America was not invited. Now, what does that mean? They are peeling off allies like Turkey. Remember,
right.
Turkey's
NATO.
A NATO member. Right. They're peeling off our allies, and so it, has the threat increased? Yeah, the threat's increased. It's not just the military threat. It's the threat of their influence. It's their economic influence and just as importantly, their diplomatic influence and their ability to influence people that we have considered to be traditional allies.
Mm-hmm. In terms of military readiness, does he have a – you think he has a solid handle on the state of our nation's military?
I think he does. I don't think there's any question. Look, he's been studying this ever since he left the military, since he retired. He's been studying the condition of our military. He's written about it. He's spoken about it. And I think he left open a number of things, one of which was women in infantry units. Yeah, the media reports that he said – no, I won't change that. But I don't read what he said as being exactly that. What I read was that he said he would go back and study the data that Ash Carter had when he made the decision, and then he would make a determination. I think it was very clear, though, that he left the door open for him to review some of these social policies and potentially recommend changes to the president.
Yeah, that was my take on it, is that he was saying, I'm not going in with a predetermined outcome, but I am going to look at all of this. And as you'll recall, it was the Marine Corps that was raising the concerns about this forced new policy on the military of women in frontline active combat units.
That's right, Tony. And he also talked about standards. If you can meet the standards, well, the Marine Corps proved in their test that they ran, and they ran the most extensive evaluation of this of any of the services, they proved that it's very difficult for women to meet these standards, primarily because of their upper body strength and their overall stamina. Now, there are always some women that can do far more than you and I can do, but that's not the point. The point is, what can the average woman do? And I think that the Marine Corps has proven that the physical standards, if you expect any significant cohort of women to be in infantry units other than one or two here and there, you're going to have to change the standards. And I think that Mattis put a marker down today that we're not going to change the standards.
And it looks like his confirmation is going to glide through, because in order for him to serve, there had to be a waiver passed by Congress sidestepping a federal rule that prohibits a recently retired officer from serving in that capacity as Secretary of State. That was approved by the Senate already, 81-17. Mm-hmm. It now goes to the House, where approval there is almost certain as well.
Yeah. Well, and the initial vote there, just think of who the three were that voted against him in the initial vote there in the Senate. It was Gillibrand, it was Blumenthal, and it was Elizabeth Warren. I mean, three of the most uber-liberal people there, and there was no substance to their unwillingness to vote in support of this great warrior. It was all about their political leanings and just wanting to create a problem for Donald Trump in the process of getting a Secretary of Defense.
I found it interesting, General Boykin, in the remarks made by Senator John McCain regarding the Russian President Vladimir Putin. He said that the U.S. they need to see him as an enemy, and we'll never be a partner with him. And I thought, given the of course the contention over the issue of Russia and the hearings for Rex Tillerson, I thought that was an interesting statement made by John McCain.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. And look, Mattis's hearing was also interesting on the issue of Russia, because he clearly identified Russia as an enemy. And I think that is significant. And people, the media is already whipping it into a frenzy that he is countering Trump's narrative. I see this as being a positive.
So your overall take, General James Mattis, going to be a good general?
He will be confirmed, he'll be a good Secretary of Defense, yes.
All right. General Jerry Boykin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's great to talk with you.
Well, if you missed any of today's program, you can find a link to it by heading over to tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.